This is the continuation of session 3.
Then he said, generally say Wang Chuk. Wang Chuk means Lord of Power. And in this case, he says he has total power. He's a Lord. He's a great master of the Dharma. Chuki Wang Chuk. Yinbei Na Wang Chuk. So he's called Ishvara, which means power, being of great power, because he's a master of the Dharma. So Abha Lok. Lok means to look. Abha means down. Lokka means he who looks down. Ishvara means Lord of Power. And when Avalokka bumps into Ishvara, in Sanskrit it has to change to E. So it's Avalokiteshvara. Okay? So it says, they say, Chandu Samba Samba Chamba Papa Chamba Sivan Chuki Shiragi Parati Chamba Samani La Number Tashing Shiragi Parati Chamba Samani means the profound perfection of wisdom. Nina Number Tashing means he looked upon it. Okay? He saw it. Literally, it means he looked upon it. And I always wondered what it meant, you know, and it's not very clear. Okay, so he looked upon it. What's that mean, you know? He can't be in meditating on emptiness because he's about to talk. He can't be perceiving emptiness directly. So what does it mean he's looking at emptiness? You know, and he says, means, I mean, if you take it him to be not a normal bodhisattva, and if you take him to be something more than that, which we can't technically do in a sutra teaching, then he is in meditation, and he Choni Dapa Shudam says, "Tumba dam tumbar." As much as the Buddha is, he is also engaging his mind in emptiness. Okay, so if you take him to be someone special, he is engaging his mind in emptiness just as much as the Buddha is, and that's one way to read this line. Okay, and number tashing. If you take him to be a bodhisattva, which is how we have to take him in a sutra teaching, he is starting to think about emptiness. Okay, and that's what it means when they say he looked upon emptiness. Okay, he's like starting to think, hey, I wonder about this emptiness thing. Okay, tominila number tashing. Okay. And then he's also starting to look at Pumbongapo. Okay, he's starting to examine the real nature of Pumbongapo. These are the five parts of a person. Okay, you have five components that you are made of. Each one is no simple single thing. Each one is a huge pile of things, and so they're called skandhas. Okay, and that's all skandha means. The five heaps, okay? Each one of the five parts of you is made up of jillions of other things. So we call them heaps, from the Abhidharma Kosha. So the five heaps are your physical body, your physical world, your capacity to feel things, good or bad, or neutral, which never stops, okay? You may be in neutral for a while, but it's not that your feelings aren't running, okay? Your capacity to discriminate between things. This is good, this is bad, I like this, I don't like that. You make distinctions between things. I'll skip number 4 and go to number 5. Your raw awareness. You know, the fact that you are not unconscious. The fact that you are not dead in Western terms. Okay, the fact that you are still aware in general. Your general consciousness. Okay, and then all the other parts of you. Your anger, your jealousy, your compassion, your concentration, your love, your identity. There are parts of you and they don't fit in anywhere else. So number 4 is called the grab bag. Okay, and it's exactly what Abhidharma says, Duchi Pumbo Shileshen. All the other parts of you throw into number 4. Okay, and then the Western scholars struggle to name it something, you know, compositional factors. Okay. It's just the other parts of you. Okay. It's defined as in the Abhidharma Kosha, which is the place where it's defined in the first chapter as all the other parts of, hey, the rest of that stuff, throw it in number four. Okay. Duje Pumbushilishan. Okay. But he says, now Avalokiteshvara is going to go into a meditation, an examination of the five heaps, of the five parts of a person. And you already started one this morning, actually last night. Okay, you are doing the same meditation. That is the same meditation. Okay, you started with your physical world. To do that, you have to go through your five senses. And that's what we started already. We're going to concentrate on the first one, which is the visual sense. And that we'll be concentrating on that. When you do your emptiness meditation, don't wander all over the place, you know. Even the Buddha and Avalokiteshvara picked one. Okay? It's probably okay for us, you know. You know, pick one and concentrate on it. Visual form is very, very important. Okay? When you see emptiness directly for the first time, it may well be triggered by an understanding about the visual world around you, because we live in that most. We live in it so much that the first skanda, the first heap, is called visual form. You know, there's this big debate about it. Why did they call the first skanda rupa or form, meaning shapes and colors? It's a word that normally means shapes and colors. When they name the five heaps, it refers to everything you smell, everything you hear, everything you taste, everything you touch, and everything you see. Why did they use everything you see to name all the physical parts of you? Because that's 95% of your world, you know. Your physical world is 95%. You live in the visual, okay? When somebody asks you about your world, you're thinking about what you see, okay? So we'll concentrate on that when we do the emptiness meditation. We could have done smells, but they're just harder, okay? Like, where did that onion smell come from? Or, you know, it's just harder. There's not as many choices and not as much variety normally. Okay. So let's have a moment. He says an interesting thing. And I always used to wonder about it. I love Chani Dabhisheta for that. He's very, his thinking is very, the Amdos think that way, okay? They write their commentaries that way. The Utsang, the people from Middle Tibet, they're much more mystical. They're not so interested in the words. They go straight for the meaning and they give you a long commentary on the Heart Sutra without mentioning any of the words. And that's good. Jetsun Kapa's like that. But, you know, since we're foreigners and we don't know the words very well, it's kind of nice to have an Amdo sometimes to explain them, okay? He says, Deitse chanju sambha sambha chambha papa rachame siwa chuki humangapa dedala yama shingin number tao. Tao means look at it. You see, tao chao means you should look at it. It's almost the imperative. You see, tao. And in a lot of editions it says tao chao. Okay, and Choni Lama, the Lama from Choni. Choni Lama says, I don't know why he did that. You know, a lot of the editions say, should look upon the heap of form, etc. Should look upon the five heaps. And he says, frankly, I don't know. You know, I like it when a commentator says sometimes, "Mide nyam yang." I'm not sure it's the right wording. Pelchele deta chung, but most of the editions say that. Chungwe dak. This dak means you check. I can't figure it out. That means we have to look into this further. It's like when a commentator reaches a point and says, I don't know. You guys figure it out later. Okay, that. Okay, we'll do a little bit more on the sutra. We're on the second page, the fourth line, at the very end. Okay. Yan deitse chandru sema sema chupa pabha chumisi wanchu shuragi parachim sama chupa nambata Samuchupanambata. Okay, and this, if you know Tibetan, this is a little confusing. Okay, Samuchupanambata. He looked upon the profound activity. Okay, he looked upon the deep actions. Okay, Samuchupanambata. And Choni Lama says, Dear Samutopeshara Gombala Samuchupashejate, when the text says he looked upon profound activity, the profound activity mentioned here is Samutomanila Gomba, which means meditating on profound emptiness. So when they say he engaged in profound activity, it means he also went into a kind of an intellectual meditation on emptiness, okay, if you take him to be a bodhisattva. Detana chirtacho ni mingyawar samso. And Choni Lama says, hey, when you think about it, they've added the word for tawa and chirpa. Tawa and chirpa. Tawa normally means when it's opposed to chirpa, like in Samotawegyu and Gyachen Chirpegyu, the two great lineages. It's the lineage of profound viewpoint, how bodhisattvas think, especially about emptiness. And then there's this, which comes down from Manjushri in general, and joins itself in Lord Atisha. And then on the other side, you have this great lineage about compassion. That's in this picture over here also. Those, the on the left and the right are the two great lineages of activity and viewpoint. You know, one great lineage of how to think about emptiness, and all the great teachers are pictured there. And then another great lineage of how to engage in bodhisattva activities, especially compassion. So wisdom and compassion in two groups of lamas who have taught it since the time of the Buddha. So generally these two are opposed. Even in the picture, they are the lineage for the profound and the lineage for activities, but somebody's pulling something on us here. Samuchupa nila namrata. You know, he looked upon the profound activity. And Choni Lama says, hey, did you notice he's trying to fuse them? He's trying to say, hey, there's a union here between the way you act like a bodhisattva and the way you think like a bodhisattva, between the activities of a bodhisattva and the viewpoint of a bodhisattva. And did you notice that in this sentence he's jamming them together? Okay, it's kind of cool. The next line, at the end of line 7, okay, we've covered everything down to that. Dene sangeki tutsera nema sharipu. By the way, the way we memorize it in the monastery, we have input in the computer the prayer books for some major monasteries, which are different. And over hundreds and hundreds of years, there one translation becomes more popular among a certain lineage. Generally, they're all correct. And they all go back to some translator who translated it a certain way. Slight differences, very, very slight. The way we recited it, Sarah May here, it says, Dene Sangikutu Tsenanema Sharipu. Here it says Sharatwatipu. They're the same thing. But that's why I put both versions in there. You have one that was done earlier, last year version. And then the one you have in your hand, which we're using, that is from the canon itself. It's much older from the canon itself. And Choni Dapa Shirup is commenting on the canonical version. So I want you to have both, okay? Dene sangeki tu tsenandama sharipu. Dene means and then, okay? Those of you who transcribed Rinpoche's tapes, and you wanted to know what the dene, dene, it means, well, then. Okay. Now then, dene, samjawate duki keparo. He says he's just making a bridge in composition. It's important in Sanskrit and Tibetan and in English. You know, you set up your reader. It's the start of a new paragraph in English. And then, sangekitu. Sangekitu means by the power of the Buddha, by the mystic power of the Buddha. Okay. Sangekitu. The word tu is very loaded. In modern Tibetan, tu means almost like voodoo. Like tu gyat means to curse somebody. So tu means some kind of extraordinary magical power, you know, by the power of the Buddha. Sangeki tu. Sedan denba sharipu. And by the way, Sangeki tu, Choni Lama says, is meant to indicate that you can forget about Shariputra acting on his own volition after this point. You know, he is a puppet in the hands of the Buddha. The Buddha's in deep meditation and he's running Shariputra. Okay. Why is he called Sedan Dhamma? I used to worry about it, you know. Sedan Dhamma, and Jani Lama is very funny here. He says, what's that Sedan Dhamma mean? By the way, Sedan Dhamma means that he who has life. Okay. And Shariputra is called here he who has life. Okay. He says, Chirmat say, well, no, that in general, he who has life means he probably hasn't died yet. But that's probably not what the point is. Dear Ngapa, Shesa Kyaparo, it's meant, Shesa means as a term of respect or a term of praise. You know, it means the honorable or the venerable. Okay, he who has time. Technically, in the Vinaya, Tsedan Denpa is used for junior monks. Okay, and I don't know why. Maybe it means they have a lot of time to go. Because the word says they have time, you know, and you would think it would mean senior, and it used to confuse me a lot. But in Vinaya, it's a term used to address a junior monk. I don't know if that's the point here, but Chöden Lama says the main point is that it's a term of honor. Okay, they're using this the venerable Shariputra. Okay. Ma Sharakipu yimbe na Sharipu. That's kind of cool. I always wondered why he was called Shariputra. Okay, in Sanskrit, Shariputra. Putra means son. Who's Shari? You know, it's not, you know. And he says, by the way, his mother's name was Sharika, and that's why he's called Shariputra. Okay, he's the son of Shari. Okay, the son of Shari. By the way, we'll get to Sharatvatipu later. Okay, and I always used to wonder why they weren't the same. Sometimes in this sutra, he's called Shariputra. Sometimes he's called Sharatvatipu, and we'll see the difference later. Dingobola niente tseni mayinte. Dingobola, ngopo generally means functioning thing. In a more general way, it means object. And in Amdo colloquial, ngopola means in reality. Okay, ngopola, in reality, niente tseni mayinte. He's no normal person. He's not just a normal disciple. Tsenipa mayente. Drensele Jipselki Tupa Yimba Shepe So. A very famous commentary on the Abhisamankara, and it says, in there it says, hey, this guy is an emanation. Okay. So it's an emanation of a Buddha in the control of a Buddha, okay? All right. And that often happens in sutra. You saw in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, Subhuti is considered to be a tantric deity who goes and asks another enlightened being a question for our benefit. Okay. Dikeche mesos. Dikeche meso again means spoke the following. The whole thing that I'm about to explain was spoken. Okay, Sharapatibula dikeche meso. And Shariputra is about to ask a question of Avalokiteshvara. Okay, so the Buddha is putting, it's a, what do you call it? In comedy, there's the other guy, the fall guy, the straight guy? Anyway. They're both like enlightened beings, and they're like, one guy's going to play the straight guy, and one guy's going to ask the questions. Okay. And so he's, Shariputra is about to ask a question to Avalokiteshvara. Okay. Rikipu mokalala, shirikipara jima samachipa chupa dupa de jita lapancha. And he starts out by saying Rikipu. Rikipu is a difficult word. I always wondered what it meant. Rik means family or type, spelled with a sa, okay? Without the sa, it means mind. Rikipu means son or daughter of type, of family. And he says here, Chösam Chanchuki Riksuke Patte. Okay, he is, they are called son or daughter of type because they are someone who has been born into the family of the Dharma, and more specifically the family of Bodhisattvas. So they are, I like to translate it as a child of noble family, meaning you are now, due to your own efforts in your life, you have taken a kind of rebirth. You are a new person. You are born again, Buddhist. and you've been born into a new family. And by studying Dharma, by practicing Dharma, you're now born into the Dharma. You are now a son or daughter of noble family. That's Rikipu. Okay. Some texts here say Rikipu am Rikipu mo. And then some texts don't say Rikipu am Rikipu mo. Okay. Rikipu means son of noble family. Rikipu mo means daughter of noble family. And Buddhism is sometimes accused of being very patriarchal. When you get to the secret teachings, it changes completely to the opposite. So forget that objection, okay? And I can't explain it to you right now. But it's very silly, okay? Anyway, here's somebody from the 1600s saying, hey, we see this written both ways. Some of the texts say, son of noble family. What does it mean there? And he says, you can either take the text that say daughter of noble family as a corruption, or you can take it as something else. Okay, so some of them say son or daughter, some of them only say son. So he says, if you think it's a corruption that it says daughter, then you should read son of noble family as the vocative, meaning, O son of noble family, referring to Avalokiteshvara. You see? And then the objection is gone anyway. So he's saying, O son of noble family, what are we to do? You know, how are we to practice? And if you read it, the original sutra as saying, only son of noble family, Chonidrapa Shedup says, then he's talking to Avalokiteshvara. Okay? And he's calling him, O son of noble family. Kachi gyape la dir rikipu sheduk che sumatana. Some people say that in the Chinese version, he says, it says here clearly, son or daughter of noble family. And in fact, in the canon, in the Hossa carving of the canon, it does say son or daughter of noble family. And he says, if you read it that way, okay, then you have to interpret this line as meaning, O Avalokiteshvara, if we are any man or woman who is interested in studying the perfection of wisdom, what are we supposed to do? Okay, and then you can read it that way, he says. He says, anyway, for those of you who think it doesn't refer to women, you're wrong, because the next word is Kanglala. Kanglala means all of us at all, any one of us at all. And so this is 300 years ago, and he's addressing the question, okay? And he says, whether you take it to be O Avalokiteshvara, or whether you follow the additions that say noble son or daughter, it don't matter, because the next line, the next word is all of us, whoever we may be, okay? I always used to wonder, it says here, Samochepa chepala, samochepa chepate, samochepa chepa. He repeats the word activity. And Chonidrapa Shedup says, how come he repeats the word activity? Okay. He says the first one is a noun, activity. The second one is a verb, act, to act the activity, to walk the talk or something. You know, to do the activity. And then he says, by the way, the verb here means to strive in your personal practice. Okay, so, you know, how are we supposed to practice? What are we supposed to do? You know, he's asking, Shariputra is asking Avalokiteshvara, those of us who want to see emptiness, what should we do? Okay, how should we work on our daily practice? Okay. Jita Laparja, he says, is loaded. The word, how are we to train ourselves? What are we supposed to learn? He says, the real question he's asking is, how are we supposed to learn the five paths? And here is the first mention that the Heart Sutra is a textbook in the five paths. And if you don't have a commentary, you might not ever figure that out, okay? The Heart Sutra is a textbook on how to go through the five paths. And you all know, Tsokchor Tonggom Milok. Okay, sorry you can't repeat things while you're here. Anyway, it's nice. Tsokchor Tonggom Milok. Okay, Tsokchor Tonggom Milok. These are the five great spiritual levels. You have to go through all accumulation, and it's generally marked by true renunciation. Tired of the ups and downs, tired of the relationships falling apart, tired of your body getting old. Okay, Tsokchor, starting to understand emptiness intellectually. Tong, the profound, intense, 15-20 minute direct experience of emptiness, upon which time you see your future lives, you see your own enlightenment, your whole reality changes, like we spoke about last night. You become aware of a whole 50% of the universe that you didn't know about, and that you didn't have any proof for. And then suddenly, you know, there's twice as much stuff to think about. You know, there's a whole nother realm that you didn't even really believe about. Okay, Gom, you use your knowledge of emptiness to eliminate your mental afflictions. If you're on a bodhisattva track, you also develop your compassion to such a high point that path number five is enlightenment. Okay, so Milop. So here's the first time, Citta Laparja. You know, Shariputra is asking Avalokiteshvara, how are we supposed to train ourselves in the five paths? Okay. Citta Laparja. Dekeche Mepadang. He doesn't even leave the quotation marks alone, okay? Dekeche Mepadang means, see, in Tibetan there are no quotation marks. You don't know where somebody stops talking and where another person starts talking. And in the sutra they say, Dekeche Mepa means, thus did he speak. And he says, that's just a way to let you know he's through speaking here. That's the quotation mark. Okay, Dekeche Mepa. Let's read the second line at the end now. Chandu Samba Samba Chambo Papachari Siva Chukitsena Namashari Pula Dike Cheme So. And then Avalokiteshvara responded to Shariputra in the following words. Okay? Then he responds and says, Rigipuam Rigipumu Kalara Shirgi Paradu Chima Samba Chepa Chepa Dupa De Dita Namar Da Chate. Oh Shariputra, any noble, now he really does say, any noble son or noble daughter, son or daughter of noble family who wishes to engage in the perfection of wisdom and see emptiness should train themselves as follows. And then there's this debate about, does the as follows, right, chao te, mean the first two paths or all five paths? And Choni Lama says, I'm on the five path side. Okay, he's explaining, he's saying, train yourself as follows in the five paths. Train yourself as follows all the way up to the end of this sutra. Okay? As follows refers to all the five paths up to the end of the sutra. Pumbung abo deda kyang ngo ni ki tomo namo jesa tao jesu tao. Pumbung abo deda na yang rashi ki tomo namo yang dapa jesu tao. These are two different versions, okay? Depending on which ones you've memorized. But it means the same thing. Ngon yi ki tomba and rashin ki tomba means the same thing. Okay? It doesn't have any nature of its own. And then he's going to go into the meaning of that. Pumbung abo deda kyang. We're now on the fourth line from the bottom. So he has answered Shariputra and he said, everybody should train themselves like this. Everybody should try to look at things like this. And what he's doing is he's starting to give him an emptiness meditation. And this is the same thing that you're going to be doing. Kedup J bases his on the Heart Sutra, and you're doing the same thing. Okay? He says, you want to see emptiness? Well, start thinking about it like this. Okay? Pumbung abo deda kyang. Pumbung abo means the five parts of yourself, the five heaps, the five skandhas. Pumungapo, deda, kyang. Kyang used to bother me. I used to, why he said kyang here? Kyang means also. But he didn't mention anything yet. You know, it's like, you should also see the five heaps. You know, and I'm like, but you didn't say anything else yet, so why are you saying also? Pumungapo, deda, kyang. And Chonin Lama is very thorough, of course, and he says, by the way, the kyang means, when he starts out his answer by saying the five heaps or the five parts of yourself, he's referring to them one by one. Your body, your feelings, your capacity to tell the difference between things, your awareness and all that other stuff. Individually, one by one, you have to see as being empty. And when he says kyang, which means also, he's referring to all five together. And that's why he said also. Okay, so he's saying you should also see the five heaps as a group as being empty. And when he says also, it's a mayinga, it's implying another thing, meaning, oh, by the way, you should also see them one by one. Okay, and that's why the kyang is there. And I like that. He explains the kyang. Pumungama de kyang. Ngo ni ki tomba jesu tau. And basically it says, you should see the five parts of yourself as being empty of having any nature of their own. Okay? And here you get into the meaning of emptiness, the word emptiness. I think it might have been better, although it's too late to change it, if they had said blank or something. You know what I mean? Empty is a loaded word, you know. Empty can mean my life is empty, meaning it has no meaning, you know, and that's not the point. I think the word emptiness is a little dangerous. Blank might be better. Tabula rasa, you know, empty screen in a movie theater or something like that. That's the point. The point is that empty or devoid of any nature of its own until you start projecting onto it. You see what I mean? So the base reality is blank. And what you see is being determined by other factors. They don't have a nature from their own side. They are like a... You know, I got to the movie late two nights ago. Early, for the first time in history. And, you know, I let them screwed up on the time, and I was like an hour early. First they wouldn't let me... First they didn't want to let me in, because they're afraid I would sleep in the floor of the theater or something. And stare at this empty screen, you know. And it's like that, you know, reality has no, there is no nature of it, and that's what emptiness means. Think of it as blank, you know. The starting point is zero. Reality is blank until you start projecting onto it, okay? And that's what Tomba means. It means the simple absence of anything other than that. And Tomba means an absence of something. They don't have any nature of their own. Okay, you can tell about songs, for example. I mean, people, or artwork, or movies. You know, some people say that was a really lousy movie. Some people say it was a really good movie. It's not a good movie from its own side, and it's not a lousy movie from its own side. And the critics can argue all day long, and they'll never decide. It truly and validly does seem good to some people, and it truly and validly does seem bad to other people. And so from one point of view, meaning from the point of view of two different people, you can say that simultaneously a movie is, the Titanic was lousy and great. You know, and to sit there and argue about whether from its own side it was lousy or great is useless. And it doesn't have a nature of being good from its own side, or from being lousy from its own side. It's not coming from the Titanic. You know, it's coming from somewhere else, obviously. I mean, the Titanic is the proof of it. You know, I mean, some people go through New York and see these posters all over the place of this nice blonde guy, you know, and they're like, oh, what, it's disgusting, you know. And then other people are like, oh, it's so wonderful, you know. And it doesn't have a nature of its own, and it's useless to fight over it. You will see what your karma forces you to see. And it doesn't have any nature of its own. Okay, so it's easy to see about whether a movie is good or bad. It's right nature. You see nature, you know. And like that, I missed it. But by the way, it doesn't. That proves it, actually. Okay? I didn't see it. You know, I paid and I paid the fine. It doesn't have its own nature. I didn't see it, you see. For me, it doesn't exist in a sense. Even the colors and shapes moving on the screen, it's easy to see that whether or not it's a good movie is not coming from its own side. But its very existence doesn't come from its own side either. And the proof is that I didn't get to see it, you know, the first 5 minutes. So you have to think about that. Not only is its content about that, right? So he says, all things, including your body, your five heaps are empty. And when you sing emptiness, you do so from the point of view of your five heaps, and you do it individually. You go through the emptiness of physical objects, for example, or you go through the emptiness of a pot on the stove or something like that. When you are doing it intellectually, you go through that. When you see emptiness for the first time directly, it is always the emptiness of you yourself. For Janice, it will be the emptiness of Janice. For Al, it will be the emptiness of Al. When you see it directly for the first time, it's always your own personal emptiness. And that's why he mentions the five. That's why he's starting. He wants you to intellectually study the five heaps. And when the day comes to see it directly, it will be of yourself. Okay. Now he's going to start what we call Sammo Shijor. Sammo Shijor. Sammo means profound. Shi means four. Jor means applications. So he's going to start now the four profound applications. He's going to say about each of the five heaps, he's going to make four statements. Sukton bao tomani suso, sule tomani shemayin, tomani lekyan su shemayin. He's going to say four things about each of the five heaps. And I'd like to take a break here.
This is the end of session 3. Session 4.
Okay, get ready to meditate. And start watching your breath. And in your mind, start working from left to right as if you were turning your head all the way to the left. Don't twist your neck. And move your mind around the room from the left to the right and look at all the colors, everything you remember about this room. And slowly be aware of all the colors and shapes, the trees outside, the grass, the sky, and then the wall, the balcony, the other people, and scan from left to right, very slow. When you get to the end and look down at your lap and your knees and your hands, don't try to examine anything, don't try to analyze anything. You're just looking at it like a child. So that's step one, and don't forget it. When you do your own emptiness meditation at home, then that'll be the first step. And the second step is to try to get in touch with your feelings about that, those colors and shapes. Try to get in touch with your feelings about this room and the people in it and the things you see outside, out the window. And the feeling, the automatic feeling you have that those things exist out there from their own side. And prove it to yourself. This is your ignorant self, okay? And prove it. I can reach out and touch it. You know, if I spit, it will hit something. If I left the room, it's not like this room would disappear. You know, all those arguments that your mind would make automatically to prove that those things exist outside, out there, from their own side. And now look at the same things. Move your eyes in your mind from left to right across the room. Scan the room. But instead of scanning it like a child, then now scan it like a person who's been asked, is this stuff existing out there, or is it just part of your mind, or something like that? And your automatic reaction is, of course it exists out there. If I picked up my meditation cushion and threw it at the window, it would break. And that's not from my side, that's from its side. And scan the room thinking about how you feel about it in that way, how you feel that it's out there and that everything is existing from its own side, and it's impinging on you and not you on it. It's looking at you. It's existing towards you. Higher School of Madhyamika says that all of those things you're looking at are dependent origination. So you have to figure out what's the difference between a thing. What does it mean when someone thing exists as dependent origination? And those of you who've taken the courses, you know, the lower schools of Buddhism say something is dependently arising, or something is dependent origination when it comes from its own causes. And that's useful to think about. And people are very excited nowadays. People write books about how the Buddhist idea of dependent origination and other ideas of relationships, or modern ideas of society and relationships, that everything is interlinked and everything is helping to cause everything else. And there's a great ecology, and it's a very popular Buddhist theme right now in books about Buddhism, and you know, codependent arising or systems theory. That is along the lines of the lowest interpretation of Buddhism. It's not by itself; it won't get you enlightened. That's one interpretation of what dependent origination means, that things come from their causes. But for example, scientists understand that very well and they use it, but it doesn't make them enlightened. They still die. They still get old. So the Buddha taught it, but then he said, if you're strong enough, if you have kelwa, if you're a good student, then you can think of dependent origination in a higher way. And that's the next school of Buddhism, the lower Madhyamika school, the Svatantrika, and they would say things are dependently originating when they depend on their parts. And that's what it means to be dependently originating. And then that's helpful. Again, it's one more step, and it covers more things than the cause thing, because some things don't have causes, but they exist. For example, empty space, objects like that, the lack of an elephant in this room. They exist. The lack of an elephant in this room is a thing, but it doesn't have causes. Nothing made it happen, it just happened. So that idea is even more sophisticated, but the highest one and the one that gets you liberated is Madhyamika Prasangika. That's the system of the Buddha. It's the system of Nagarjuna. It's the system of Jetsonkapa and all the Dalai Lamas. The highest school of Buddhism says that things are dependent origination when you realize that really everything is just a blank screen. The world is a blank screen. And your mind is making you see something. Your mind is forcing you to see something there. And that's what dependent origination means. That when you look around this room from left to right, every single object you see because your mind is forcing you to see it, and not because they exist out there from their side. And that's the ultimate. By the way, I'm not talking about emptiness yet, right? I'm talking about the apparent truth around us, the appearance of things around us. What causes it? It's not coming from their side. It's coming from your mind's side. And the reason why each one of us is experiencing this room a little differently is that each one of us has a slightly different karma that's forcing our mind to see something. And the reason why some people in this room loved the Titanic and some people hated it is that each person has different karma to see the same thing in a different way. And the reason we can talk about the Titanic being good or bad is that you and I did have the same karma to see the movie. So sometimes we share the same karma and we can enjoy a movie together. But it's still a movie which is being projected by you and me independently, but in a very similar way, so we can talk about it. We don't have to debate whether or not the movie was on the screen, because we're both in the same realm, and we have the same karma to be in the same realm, and we have the same karma to be in the same movie theater. And sometimes you have the same karma with someone else to enjoy the movie in the same way, and that's no contradiction. But still, each one of you is seeing only what their karma forces them to see. So take your eyes around the room from left to right, and this is the third step of Kedupje's meditation. You start from the left, go to the right. Try to imagine those colors and shapes as being the way they are because of your own mind. And if you start being very good person, if you can clean up your speech and your thoughts and your actions, the one proof of things is that even the colors and shapes of things around you will become more beautiful. The colors become more clear, sharp. The feel of the wind on your body is more pleasant. Things that you eat become more luscious and tasty, and music that you hear becomes more intense, and this is all a result of virtue of goodness working on your mind. So go around the room from left to right now and try to imagine that everything is coming, that the reason you're seeing it this way is from your own mind. And that's the dependent origination. We didn't reach emptiness yet. So the third step is to see, instead of going around the room and assuming that everything you see exists from its side, now go around the room and entertain the possibility that the reason it looks that way to you is coming from you. Okay? So now look around the room again. And let your mind float from object to object. Stop on one like a tree. And think if it could be coming from your side. It's very important to point out at this juncture that Buddhism is not saying that you're living in your head or something like that. There are objects out there. There is something green, there is something brown. There is a round part and a straight part. But how you interpret that data, how you organize it mentally, and what you think is there, and I think most modern psychology would agree, is completely dependent on your state of mind. Then go back to seeing it the second way. You know, take your eyes from left to right. This is called the, in meditation manuals, it's called jumping. You go forward through a meditation, and then you go backwards, and then you go forward again, and then you go backwards, and then you do number one and number three, and then you go to two, and then you go to three again, and back to one, and it sharpens your mind. It sharpens your meditation. So go back to number two now. Take your eyes around the room and try to get in touch with your automatic feeling that the things exist out there. Jump back to number one. You're just a child. You're Kirin. They brought you into this big room. You're looking from left to right around the room. You're just looking at colors and shapes. You're not worrying about where it comes from or if it exists out there or my karma is making me see it. You're not worrying about if your karma is making you see it. You're not worrying about any of those things. You're just enjoying the view. Go back to number two. Get in touch with the feeling that you have that those things really do exist out there. Jump to number three fast. These things are coming from my mind. My mind is forcing me to see these things this way. If I just hadn't said that thing to my boss last week, the colors might be better in this room today. Okay, and then relax for a minute. Okay, we'll do a little bit of commentary. I think the part coming up here is the hardest part of the Heart Sutra. Rinpoche used to call it the Heart Sutra, okay? it's the most misunderstood and the most abused part of the Heart Sutra. These poor sutras get abused by Westerners a lot, you know? But we'll correct that. We'll probably have a Sutra Abuse Prevention Society or something. It says, Sutomba o Tomani Suso, Sule Tomani Shemayin, Tomani Lekian Su Shemayin. Okay? Those are they're called the Sammoshijwa. These are the four statements that the Buddha now makes about every single object. But he starts with the things you see. And that's where we started. So he's starting in the same place. Concentrating on the first heap, the first part of a person, and concentrating on mainly visual things. Okay? And he's saying, the things you see are emptiness. Emptiness is the things you see. Emptiness is nothing other than the things you see, and the things you see are nothing other than emptiness. Those are the four applications. They're called the four applications. The four applications of profundity. Okay. Sutombao, everything you see is emptiness. Domini suso, Emptiness is everything you see. Sule tomini shimayin. What you see is nothing other than emptiness. Tomini leshensu shimayino. And emptiness is nothing other than what you see. Okay, these are the four applications. And he continues that. So if you get the first one, you get the rest. So you have to concentrate on the first one. And then we can just skip to the rest. Okay? He says the same thing about everything else in the universe. Okay, the four applications. Okay, it's lucky we had a logic course for 2 or 3 months. Now I can use all of those terms at will, and I won't get so many blank stares. Okay, and that's why we study logic. Okay, and this is where it pays off. Okay. First of all, as you know, if you studied logic, it cannot be true that suktom bao tomini sukso sune tomini shamayin tomini lekansu shamayin. It cannot be true. The Buddha taught, everything that the Buddha ever taught can be divided into two different categories. When the things he taught and he meant what he said, and the things he taught when he didn't mean what he said. The things he taught which are literal were meant literally, and the things he taught which were meant figuratively. And they're using some words nowadays which are really weird. I don't remember what they are anyway. That's all it means, figurative and literal. Okay? Sometimes he's literal, like when he said the world is suffering, that's literal, and if you don't believe it, just live a little more. then he said, kill your father and mother. Meaning, if it's necessary, leave your home behind and devote yourself to your spiritual practice in order to help your father and mother. You know what I mean? In order to serve them. Or something like that. But of course, the Buddha would never advise you to hurt another sentient being. That's figurative. The first one is literal. What is the evidence that he's speaking figuratively here when he says, what you see is emptiness, and emptiness is what you see? Now I can use the terms from the class we had. And automatically you can destroy a lot of the uneducated teachings going on about emptiness in the next 5 minutes, okay? First of all, what you see is a positive thing. Okay? It's what we call dupa, right? You studied dupa and gakpa. What you see around you is positive. Okay? You can touch it, you can feel it, you can look at it, you can eat it. You know, fills your stomach. Okay? It's something positive. Emptiness is the absence of something. Okay? And I like to compare it to the absence in this room. The absence of a two-headed, 14-foot, full-sized purple elephant in this room. Okay? I'll say it again. Is there a two-headed 14-foot, or was it 15? Full-sized, purple, live, rampaging elephant in this very room in which we sit, you know? And is there such a thing in this room? And you say no. Is the absence of that elephant in this room an event? I mean, does it have some reality? Does it exist? You have to say yes. That exists in this room. It's one of the characteristics of this room that it is not currently housing a two-headed, 15-foot, purple, full-sized, breathing, rampaging elephant. Okay, it's a characteristic of this room. That's the emptiness of a two-headed, 15-foot, purple, rampaging elephant in this room. Seriously. And it doesn't mean anything more than that. It's not here. That thing ain't here. That's emptiness of that thing. It's absence from this room. Okay. Why did I use a 15-foot, or was it 14-foot, two-headed, purple, full-size, rampaging elephant? Why didn't I just say the lack of an elephant in this room? I wanted to emphasize the fact that emptiness is the absence of something which never did exist, never will exist, and never could exist in this room. The gakcha, the thing that emptiness denies, the thing we say don't exist, never could have existed, and you have to get used to that. Okay, it's an impossibility. So why worry so much about something that could never exist? Because every moment of your day, you do believe that it exists, and that causes you all your suffering. All suffering of a creature in this realm is directly brought about by their belief that something that doesn't even exist and which could never exist is here. And that becomes important. That thing which never existed, never could exist, and doesn't exist becomes crucial, because I'm tired of, my life going up and down. I'm just tired of it, And if there's some way to stop it, I would appreciate it. I don't want to lose all my friends. I love all of you. I want to stay with those people. I want all the good stuff, and I don't want any of the bad stuff. Is it possible? Is it possible? And it all boils down to that. That so it becomes crucial to understand an object.
Session 4 continues on the next CD.